Good evening, good evening. Welcome to a special gathering of the Friends and Young Friends of the New Criterion, and something a little different for us. I'm James Panero, executive editor, and it's great you could be here on such a beautiful evening, and I promise more beauty tonight. We hold these events to thank you for your support of the New Criterion, but we also want to thank you for your advocacy of the publication. Our circulation is at the highest levels in our history, thanks to the enthusiasm of our readers. To that end, if you know someone who would like a gift subscription to the New Criterion, we have a new card you can fill out to get that all going. And you can see Isaac, he has copies for more information. Well, now on to the show. The great choreographer, George Balanchine, famously said, "See the music, hear the dance." Well, tonight we are going to do a bit of both as we hear from Lincoln Jones, the co-founder and director of American Contemporary Ballet, and I should add, an enthusiastic reader of the New Criterion. We're also going to see what it means to choreograph for ballet through a demonstration right here in the editorial offices by Hannah Barr, one of ACB's dancers. Lincoln was born in Fullerton, California. He began dancing at the age of 19. Now, I should say 19 can be rather late to start dancing. So it is all the more remarkable to note that Lincoln went on to receive scholarships to the Joffrey, as well as San Francisco, Pennsylvania, Milwaukee, and Los Angeles Classical Ballet Schools before embarking on his professional career. In 2011, Lincoln founded American Contemporary Ballet in Los Angeles with Teresa Farrell. I also had the pleasure of profiling Lincoln for Philanthropy Roundtable, and you can pick up copies of that article while you're here. Lincoln's reverence for ballet has meant going against the grain of traditional staging, bringing the art form to warehouses and open spaces where his audiences can be immersed in his performances. Maybe a little bit like tonight. The company performs new and classical pieces over 70 times a year in Los Angeles, often to a sold-out run. We're fortunate that Lincoln happens to be in New York as he auditions for dancers here on the East Coast, and that he has taken the time to talk with us tonight. Lincoln and Hannah, welcome.
Thank you all for coming. Thank you, James. I'd like to say, for the record, I've never actually worn sneakers with a sport coat before. I have a beautiful pair of Italian leather shoes in Roger's office that I learned I can't dance in, and I'm going to bring the heat tonight. So anyway, I'm from LA. It happens to us all eventually. So we're here to talk about ballet, and I know this is a pretty cultured crowd. But I imagine you don't talk about ballet that often. Correct me if I'm wrong.
We talk about it a little
bit. You talk about it? Yeah. Okay. But I have a theory, which is that if ballet was done a little bit differently than it is done today, that we would talk about it a lot more. And that we would think about it a lot more and that it would mean a lot more to us. Because I think we're all concerned with beauty, with the experience of exhilaration, with revealing and exalting the human soul. And when done well, these are the things that ballet deals with. As James said, I started ballet late. So the first time I saw ballet was as an adult, before I'd ever tried doing it myself. And I didn't quite get it. I thought it was a strange mix of something beautiful, mysterious, boring, and awkward. But I was compelled to do it myself and to try making it. And when I did that, I really had to ask myself a question, which is, what is it? And I didn't have the answer right away. And I know now why I didn't have the answer then. But I thought that would be an interesting place to start the talk today, to talk about just that most fundamental question, what ballet is, unless you all feel you've got the answer really solidly down, and I'm just late to the game. Okay. So ballet, first of all, and this may seem obvious, is dancing. It's dancing made to be watched. And it is the attempt to turn the value of that experience up as high as we possibly can. But that begs the question, what is dancing? Now, this question is as easy to answer as it is impossible to fully explain. But the short answer is, when we hear music as human beings, we feel something, whether it be transcendence or annoyance. We feel something when we hear music. And sometimes that feeling makes you want to move. And sometimes that feeling makes you want to move rhythmically. And when you give into that feeling, that's dancing. Now, that's not exactly the same thing as moving your feet in time to the music, but we'll talk about that in a little bit. Now, what I thought I would do, the interesting way to talk about this and to show this, is to show how dancing turns into a ballet and show how a dancer turns into a ballerina. So I'm going to ask Hannah Barr. Are you there? I brought a ballerina. Now, James did not resurface the floors of the office per Hannah's rider, so we're going to have to keep this limited. So the basic dance move is listening to music and just pulsing a little bit. Now, if you ever find yourself on a dance floor and you don't know what to do, that's a great go-to. Just relax your face and pulse and you'll look cool. From there, the basic dance step is something that we can all do, which is just shifting our weight, which we're familiar with walking. Hannah, would you demonstrate that for us? Just walk for us, yes. Okay, so come on back. Right. Now, with dance, one of the ways you can start taking it from something pedestrian to something more interesting is by stylizing it. Now, all of you, I guarantee, walk differently. But we can stylize ballet in an even more controlled way. For instance, if Hannah was a member of the royal court in the 17th century, say, she might have walked something like this. And if she were, I don't know, a fashion model in the 1990s, walk like this. Now, in the 1920s, there was a dance called the one step, which is as easy as it sounds, and it is basically walking. It involves the man walking forward and the woman walking behind. And so these are various ways you can stylize walking to make them into a dance. Now, the next step towards making dancing into a dance is to start expanding the range of movement and the structures that you're dealing with. For instance, we just walked. Now, if Hannah were to walk two steps forward and then two steps backwards, that's already a little bit of a structure. Now, if we change that a little bit to say one step forward and one step back with your right foot, so one step forward with your right foot, the demonstration is going awry where she's going to take one step. She's new. One step forward with her right foot, and then one step back with the right foot, and then take one step back with her left foot, and one step forward with her right foot. This is a dance called the, anyone? No one? James, what kind of supporters do you have here? The Charleston. Okay. So now, the Charleston was invented in the 1920s. It is actually still very popular today on TikTok. There is a different version of the Charleston, which is part of a dance called shuffling, which looks something like this. But it is essentially the same structure, styled a different way. Now, as fun as Hannah is to watch, that probably is going to have a limited time span in terms of our attention and appreciation of it. After about 30 seconds, we might want to see something else. So this is where we start taking a dance into something more like choreography. So I'm just going to choreograph you a very short section of something here. Hannah has no idea what I'm going to do, but We'll start with just a basic, we'll base it all on the Charleston. So we'll start with just a basic Charleston. So why don't we go forward, back, forward. And then, let's do one more time. Forward, back, and forward. This is kind of flexible. Why don't we now make it a little bit bigger? Take a leg up forward, or
up to the side and down.
Up and down, and pulse, and up and back, and pulse. And side, we move the other leg. Yeah, there, and back, and pulse. And again, coming forward with that leg. Right? Right. And we can vary it even more. For instance, you could jump the Charleston. So what if you do a little jump? Jump up even higher in the air as you come off that leg. There you go. Da, da. And really, that did a nice little jump, that first one. I want to show that. Good. And then she could turn around doing the Charleston. Right? Yeah. And she could go up on her points. And this time, why don't we break up the Charleston a little bit? She could go forward four steps instead of two. And back four steps. Right? Let's put that together and see what we have. I don't know. It's not a great dance. But we'll... So you remember? So we have the regular Charleston twice. Two, three, four, and one, and two, and three, and four, and a one, and two, and three, and four. So bring that all the way to front. One, three, and four, and back, and two, three. And you just do it in a second. You don't have to do an arabesque. I'm afraid we're going to hit poor...
Sorry.
George here, what's your name, sir? No, you're fine. I just don't want to... We killed one in my last talk, and I don't want that to happen again. Good. Yeah? Yeah, so just up and da, and back, da, and back, da, da, front, and da. And then what did we do? We did a little jump, right? A little pop up, one, two, and two, and, but a little even higher pop. Jump way up in the air. This is the new criterion, yeah. Okay. Da, 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 da. Yeah, good, yeah. Okay. She's not having the advantage of coaching her. Turning around, four, and then we'll just walk forward and up on the points, three and four, but still give us a little bit of a swing, two and three and four, right? All right, so do we have any musicians in the audience? James, come on, I know you.
We
all right, so I'll just give you a basic beat. You ready to try this?
Sure.
So five, six, seven, and eight, and one, and two, and three, and four, and up, two, and up, da, 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 two, and up, ba, ba, and up, two, and bump, ba, ba, and up, two, and bump, little jumps, and da, 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 and let's walk forward on, all right, go around, that's good, and walk forward on your points, two, and three, and four, and ba, da, 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 right. Yeah, probably the worst thing I've ever choreographed, but at least we didn't tell anybody. Now, so, you know, this is how you can see a dance expanding, or dancing expanding into a dance. And we could take that, in fact, we just did a ballet where we did five different dancers, five different variations, essentially 15 minutes of variations on the Charleston. But let's take that second part, which is how you turn a dancer into a ballerina. So I'm going to need a volunteer for this one. No, we specifically need someone who's never had any ballet training.
He's the youngest person here.
You spent a lot of years ballet training. All right, what's your name? Never speak up when someone's looking for a volunteer. That's a big mistake. I think you'll be fine. No one's even willing to look at me. It'll be, what's your name, sir?
Yeah.
All right. This is going to be very low key. I've got a bad back, too. I promise. Okay, so Hannah, will you do an arabesque alto for us? All right. And if you just do that same thing. Okay. Can you hold on to that for a minute?
Yeah.
Okay. So immediately we can see there's a difference.
Really?
I'm shocked.
What?
on the surface of it, I mean, he's got his right arm in front of him. She's got her right arm in front of her. He's got his left arm in back. He's got his left arm in back. He's got his left leg in back. She's got her left leg in back. So what accounts for that difference? Let's take a look. Thank you very much. You're very good support. Okay. Let's really take this apart a little bit. Everything she is doing with her body right now, her body wants to be doing something else. So for instance, her leg would like to turn in like this, but she's turning it this way. Her heel would like to come up this way, but she's keeping it down. Her foot would like to unpoint, but she's keeping her toes engaged. The effort of doing that with the toes is you don't want to make the foot go like that, but she's not. Doing all this and extending your leg to the back very much makes the knee want to bend, but she's keeping it straight. In doing this, it wants to make her hips open this way, but she's keeping them there. The same thing here, it makes this want to open, but she's there. With this foot would like to roll this way, but she's holding it back. This leg would like to turn in and the knee bend, but it's opening. These hips would like to tilt back like this, since her leg is back, but she's pulling them up here. In doing that, this would like to sit back this way, but she's staying forward. With her arm coming forward, it would like to take the shoulder with it, but she's not allowing it to. This elbow would very much like to sink, but it's staying up. All of the effort here wants to make the fingers stress out, but she's keeping them light. The neck would be forward, that's where most people's necks sit, but she's keeping it back. Similarly here, the shoulder would very much like to come up here, but it's staying down, which again, would like to pull this elbow down, which is keeping it up. All of this effort generally makes the eyebrows want to rise. But she's not doing that. So, thank you, Hannah. In effect,
what she's doing is articulating and energizing every single part of her body. This is where we turn up the level on dancing. So it creates a fact, an instrument, in fact, in which the soul can come straight through the body, to speak of it poetically. But in a more mechanical sense, if one of us were to feel something and want to dance, it is unlikely our body would reproduce that feeling well. But by training her body this way with so much awareness and so much articulation and so much energy, it create something that can respond as articulately and energetically as she would like it to. And that's where we get a dancer turning into a ballerina. Now, at the beginning, I said I didn't get ballet at first. And here's why. And here's why I think a lot of times ballet doesn't live up to its potential. As you can see, there's a lot that goes into just that one pose. We haven't even moved her, but just that one single pose. And as ballet has progressed from the 14th century on up to today, the demands on the dancer have increased with every century, with every year, essentially. And it has gotten to a degree where it is difficult to do that and also do the thing that makes it mean something, which is dance. So ideally, with ballet, what you have is the most disciplined preparation and the most impulsive execution, but it is extremely rare to see. Now, there are certain choreographers that prioritized the dancing aspect of it, like George Balanchine, and when that happens, it is spectacular. But when it doesn't happen, you empty ballet of its actual reason for being, and it ceases to be beautiful and begins to be merely pretty and something that you might take your aspiring young ballerina to see, but not something that means so much for the rest of us. But I think it's something that can be reprioritized again, and eventually we can see this on a wider scale, and it'll mean a great deal to our culture. So that's our ballet portion of the talk. James also, we spoke about the current incursion of ideology into the arts. This is something that we've dealt with and that I know is of interest to James and might be of interest to you. Back in June of 2020, when the whole country was speaking about the death of George Floyd, there was something that happened in the arts world. Is anybody familiar with the Black Square? You heard of this? Okay, just a couple of you. In the arts world, everyone was expected to post a black square, not mourning George Floyd, but specifically in support of the organization Black Lives Matter. Now, I recently did a few talks with Winston Marshall. I don't know if you are familiar with him, but he was the guitarist for Mumford & Sons until he liked a book on Twitter and then, of course, had to be thrown out of his band. The way he described how forceful was the request to put the black square up. Have you heard of the band Hanson? Okay. Mbop, there you go, yeah. The band Hanson had broken up by the time that the June of 2020 had rolled around. And so their Instagram page hadn't been taken down. It was still there. But so distraught were Hanson's fans that they hadn't posted a black square that the band had to get back together to post a black square. Now, interestingly, this was not some spontaneous expression of a desire for social justice. It came with a big threat. In our case, literally, some of our dancers were threatened. They called me crying because they were being threatened that because I hadn't posted the black square. As I explained to our dancers, it was not my prerogative to represent them politically. They didn't come because they liked my political beliefs. They don't know my political beliefs, and for the most part, and that's just fine because we relate to each other artistically. But soon after that, every ballet company I know not only posted the black square, but posted a gigantic commitment to diversity, equity, and inclusion. Now, this was not the first time that I'd encountered this. A grant that I had received in 2016 or 2017, a year later, came with a new requirement that we make a commitment to diversity, equity, and inclusion. And as I researched what this meant, it came down to the fact that we had to remove merit as the criteria with which we would hire and advance staff, dancers, and board members. Now, I'm sure a few or many of you here are artists. The process of art is one of feeling deeply and finding the whispers inside yourself, the things that tell you what you like. And that's a hard job because you live in a world where people tell you what you should like and shouldn't like, and they may make fun of you or dismiss you for the things that you really like. So the job of an artist is really to find those things and be true to them. And this was an organized, in some cases, an authoritative call to do something else. It felt like someone sticking a finger in my navel. And I wasn't willing to do it. I was scared not to, but I knew immediately that I wouldn't. Of course, we got the social media shaming. People quit. It made us ineligible for, I might even say, most grants. But I think if you can't have two masters, and if art is your master, you can't have another one, and that game cannot be played for very long. So I encourage everyone to stay true to themselves despite the threats and despite what people say. And it's interesting, since that time, the first time I remember, at the time that it happened, I said no. But then I also thought, I've really got to say something about this, because everyone in the arts world that I was speaking to was coming to me privately and saying, this is ridiculous. We don't want to do it. but you gotta do it. And that didn't seem right to me. And so I was asked to be on a podcast with a philanthropy roundtable, actually. And I remember right before I went on the podcast, I was going over, okay, what am I going to say? I can't say the wrong thing. If I say the wrong word, it all comes tumbling down. And then I realized, oh my God, what the hell am I doing? I'm supposed to be an artist. I'm supposed to be becoming, finding my deepest thoughts and expressing them. And I can't even say what I think on the surface. So at that moment, I made a commitment to speak my mind whenever and wherever. Since that time, first of all, it was the best decision I ever made, just for myself. But secondly, I've learned that our audience doesn't care. Our audience is as full as ever. Among the philanthropy world, among the arts administration world and arts leadership world, it is a very big deal. No one else, everybody else just seems to want a good show. So that's what I have to say. If anybody has any questions, I'm happy to answer, or James.
Yeah.
And if you're ever in LA, you'll see actual rehearsed choreography, and it'll be quite a bit more compelling.
Well, we do have time for a few questions, if you have any from the audience.
It's very interesting what you're sharing tonight. Thank you so much for that. Because, you know, from the outside world, when you're not in the art world, you do tend to think that every artist, every art person thinks like these people. And you just said that privately, a lot of people are coming to you because they agree with you.
Yes.
So why don't you think that more of them are speaking up? Because obviously you were brave enough to speak the truth, and that's a beautiful thing. And they need, you know, warriors of truth like you. But, you know, why don't you think that they have the same integrity that you showed and did what you did?
I appreciate you saying that. I don't know if it was integrity or bravery. I think it was imagination. And I could imagine how quickly everything would fall apart if I did. I mean, first of all, I can't stand the thought of not being able to create what I want to create. So that alone would have done it. But I also can't imagine, I mean, when did you start dancing?
I was 5.
She's 5 years old. So we have a company of, currently we're a little smaller because of COVID, but about 16 dancers. And they've been working since they were 5. Every day they come in the studio and work for hours under the harshest criticism. And I can't imagine letting them know that there is now a new standard by which they are going to be judged or advanced. So two answers to your question as to why they're not. One, a lot of these were, I founded this company, it's only 12 years old. But these organizations that are larger institutions can fall victim to a situation where maybe one person isn't able to make a decision, or if they do, they're out. We had members of our board resign. I was willing to do that. I had to rebuild from the beginning, essentially. So I suppose it's fear, and that they think there's no other way. They think that there isn't an option. And of course, when you have that situation, you end up creating a reality that nobody wants. And I think nobody wants it. Maybe there are a handful of real ideologues that are pushing this stuff. Everyone else is scared. And I mean, with art, I mean, it's so hard to get a job. You know, it's so hard to become a ballerina, to work from the time you're 5, get into the good schools through talent, then get a job, and then to think, if I say the wrong thing, it all goes away. And it has for some people. So the fear is real. So I don't know if that answers your question, but I can tell you that I think if a few people, I don't think it's going to take many, but I think if a few people speak their mind, others will.
And you've joined FAIR, right?
I have, yeah. Yes. I'm on the board of FAIR, which is the Foundation Against Intolerance and Racism, and they mean old school racism, the kind where you classify people by race. And they've also started a FAIR in the arts, and we have meetups online where it is just Zoom rooms full of artists not knowing what to do. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Thank you.
Yes.
I very much enjoyed this today, so thank you for coming.
Yeah, thank you.
Does your company ever tour and come to New York?
You know, about LA, the thing I was... the thing about LA, the thing that excited me about LA is the fact that it doesn't have a history of ballet. It's been considered the Bermuda Triangle of ballet companies for years. And I thought, you know, it's interesting. When people invented ballet, they didn't sit around and think, let's make up ballet. They thought, let's entertain ourselves. What can we do? And dancing is fun. And I think we need to get back to that kind of thinking. Because I think for many people who have been in this a long time, ballet has become a reason unto itself, and it's sort of woven inside itself. And in doing so, has lost the interest of many people. I thought it'd be exciting to go to LA because I thought, there isn't a ballet crowd here. If we can't entertain them, they're not going to show up. And so we've really focused on LA. 70 performances a year keeps us very, very busy there. That said, yes, soon.
and you're in unusual venues.
Yes, we are on the 20th floor of a skyscraper. And so, you know, if you go to traditional ballets in an opera house, oftentimes you'll see that they try to create infinite perspective by a backdrop that has a town with some mountains and going off in the distance. We actually have that. You are looking over the skyline of LA into the distance, and seeing a ballet to Schoenberg's Verklärtnacht in that space or many other things is a one-of-a-kind experience. So if you are in LA, please do look us up. I recommend you come and yes. Yes.
Hello, thank you for your great presentation. You're an inspiring leader.
Oh, thank you.
Can you talk about what happened to you and your company during COVID and how resilience played a part?
Yes.
Meaning you're here talking about your art today and not.
Right. Interesting question. So COVID shut us down entirely, and we did shut down. Hannah was essentially out of work for, we got shut down in April of 2020. I'll tell you a little story that's a little bit on topic here. In about September of 2020, I thought we can't perform live, so I will write a short film based on, we have a very unusual Nutcracker. And that can be something that the dancers can do and people can see. And I didn't want it to be, you know, a film of us on stage. I wanted it to be a real film. And so I hooked up with an agency in LA, and they said, what kind of director do you want to direct this? And I told them, and I listed some very large names, assuming they meant, what kind of director do you want to direct this? Instead, they sent it to those directors, and we got interest from, I don't want to bring their names into the story, but some important directors. and then it came back that the agency that we were working with said I had to replace some of our dancers with dancers hired for their skin color, to which I said no. And they said, if you say that, you will never work again. So this gives you an idea of the kind of... nonsense is a good word. So we didn't do that. And the director had nothing to do with it that we were talking to. But then I really had to start from scratch. Our board mostly resigned. So I just started. Actually, one of the things I did was I called the philanthropy roundtable. I thought these are people that know a lot of people that are philanthropic, and they were actually instrumental in helping us get back. I ended up speaking to people who were interested in the fact that not only us as an arts organization, but the fact that we weren't changing our mission to go along with the current trends. And they were a huge help. And then slowly, for a while in LA, it was all anybody wanted to talk about. But then gradually, people stopped talking about it. The audience did, and the general donors. And now our houses are full again. And we're still having to reinvent fundraising a little bit because so many of the granting organizations require you to submit on, like tell them how many board members are of a certain color or anything else. And we won't do any of that. Yes.
Yeah. So you made the decision or just discovered, that you were going to stand on principle and that you couldn't do otherwise. Did you have confidence or not that a sufficient number of your dancers were going to stand by you? Or did you discover that way?
I had a few calls from dancers saying they were concerned and that we needed to do these things. And it was very interesting. One dancer that called me sent this long letter that was being circulated among dance companies calling for, we had to have 50% of our company be BIPOC. Have you heard that term? We had to change our repertory to stories that reflected black stories. I don't really do story ballets, so that would be an issue to begin with. And a number of things. And she said, we need to really respond to this movement. And I just said, well, here's why I don't want to do it. And explained to her my reasons. And then she laughed and cried. And she said, I think people are just bored. This is in the middle of COVID.
That explains it.
Yeah. And, but for the most part, our company, the two things I set out to do when I started this company were to make great ballet and to make a great place to work. We're one of the only ballet companies that interviews dancers. There's been many dancers that we have let go out of auditions that have been the best dancers, but not the best fits personality-wise because of how they work with others or how we think they might work with others. It feels like a family, and only one left for that reason, and she was one of the newest dancers from Seattle, go figure.
Well, I have a question. How about Balanchine's statement that ballet is woman?
Mm-hmm.
So, gosh, that seems controversial all of a sudden. For a number of reasons.
I thought we wanted to get more women in high positions.
That was last year.
Okay.
We've already seen Balanchine a little bit up and ballet itself a little bit up for cancellation. I think the New York Times recently ran a profile from some student who had been at SAB, and they were so mean to me.
Yeah.
And all the rest. And of course, the discipline of ballet is incredibly challenging and not in line with what's expected of people today. It's so different from what's generally expected of people.
Yes.
So what's the future of ballet in that world where, you need to do start at five? It has to be based on merit.
Yeah.
What's the future of that? And it has to be, and it's about a man and a woman.
Yes. I don't know if I can tell this story. All right. Well, I can. I was just speaking to somebody who works for BlackRock. And BlackRock bought Bumble, which is a dating app. And they announced they were so proud. It was the first all-female board. Now, my friend at BlackRock thought, this is a dating app, which is mostly based on having two genders meet each other. Is this really a great idea? As far as ballet goes, Balanchine's artistic vision was based on women. Mine is as well. We use men sparingly as needed. But there is something about the movement of of ballet that I do find the female body more adapted to. And a relationship between a man and a woman represented on stage, it can be done, as with Balanchine, so subtly and so complexly and in so many facets. I think in general, the future, I think it is possible we're going to see a major change in the arts. There are going to be the companies that remain funded by these organizations that are dictating to them how they need to present and what they need to present. And that will become less and less interesting to people because didactic art or art that is, you're supposed to find yourself in art. The artist finds something deep and true, and that should connect with you. If they're telling you how you should live, it's not the same experience. So I think that we're going to see a marginalization of interest in that, and we're going to find a group of artists that are going to find other ways to make their art. And I think it's going to make for a division of very interesting and very uninteresting work.
Very good. Yeah. Well, thank you so much.
Absolutely.